I'm going to speak today a little bit about buckwheat phagopyrrolates and some of their relationship to various diseases. I'll talk about their structure and composition, purification, their similarity to an insulin mediator, which we think is either insufficient or deficient in type 2 diabetes, NIDDM, non-insulin dependent diabetes mellitus, and PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome. And finally, a few comments just about utilization. Buckwheat contains six different phagopyrrolates. The phagopyrrolates are present in embryo tissue, and buckwheat is a member of the rhubarb family. It has triangular seeds, and the embryo goes right through the middle of the endosperm, a starchy endosperm, and the embryo, a dicotyledonous embryo, goes right through the embryo, through the endosperm. Part of the cotyledons wrap around the outside and also down on this side. When we have milling fractions for removing the bran or the seed coat, oftentimes the cleavage plane includes a lot of the embryo tissue with the bran fraction. Dicarinositol is the main component, and all phagopyrrolates are galactose derivatives of dicarinositol. Now, dicarinositol is also a component of an insulin mediator that's deficient in PCOS and subjects with type 2 diabetes. The main phagopyrrolates that you find not only in buckwheat, but also in a number of legumes, including soybean, is the phagopyrrolate B series. It has dicarinositol with one galactose, phagopyrrolate B1, two galactoses, phagopyrrolate B2, or three, phagopyrrolate B3. Interesting names, huh? So, these are what the stick models look like, and this structure is also present in soybean, normal soybean. However, when we looked at low raffinose and low stachyo soybean, we also found these two, B2 and B3, but we did not find the A series, which is next. This series we find only in buckwheat. We haven't found it in anything else yet. It's got a special linkage, a 1-3 linkage, and what's important about that is that's the same linkage that's present in the insulin mediator that we think is important. And the second galactose and the third galactose making the A2 and A3 phagopyrrolates. They have the same spiral staircase structure that you saw in the B series, both in the space fill models and the stick models. Buckwheat grows very rapidly. In a few days, it fills its dry matter. Fresh weight increases quite rapidly in a matter of a few days. Sucrose increases along with the fresh weight. With the dry matter accumulation, which is only about 12 days in duration, near the end of dry matter accumulation, we get an increase in the phagopyrrolates, predominantly B1, but also A1, and then lesser amounts of the other four. And these are present in embryo tissues primarily. Buckwheat grain is an achene, a fruit. It does have a hull on the outside. Impact dehulling means you slam it against something hard and pop it off, and you end up with buckwheat groats. These are the typical ingredients for kasha, for those of you that have Eastern European backgrounds. So the embryo tissues contain the phagopyrrolates. The bran material includes a lot of the embryo, including big flakes of embryo from this center part that can also come out in that fraction. So buckwheat bran contains all that. Buckwheat farinetta is finely ground bran to which additional fragments of embryo have been added. So those are commercial milling fractions. The bran fraction is rich in minerals, it's rich in protein, it's reasonably rich in lipid, It's poor in starch. Most of the starch is in the central endosperm. It's rich in fiber, and particularly the dietary soluble fiber. Most of the fatty acids in the lipid are 18-1 and 18-2, and about 12% of the embryo mass is oil. The bran fraction contains a lot of potassium, phosphorus, and magnesium. These are the components from phytin. But interesting, it's reasonably rich in manganese amongst the various seeds. Bran also has quite a few phenolics in it. Many of them are condensed tannins. Very low rutin in common buckwheat, but reasonably high phytin levels. The common buckwheat is very low in rutin. Tartary buckwheat, which is a very bitter flavor buckwheat, has very, very rich amounts, very high amounts of rutin. Phagopyrrolate concentrations are very high in the bran fraction due to the embryo components, especially phagopyrrolate B1 and A1 and lesser amounts of A2 and B2, and some A3, but very little trace amounts of B3. We isolate phagopyrrolates using a 50% ethanol solution. If we do that in a small pilot plant, we can end up with a bucket full of buckwheat syrup. We call it black gold, from about a ton of grain. Yeah. Then we take a handful of that frozen syrup, put it on top of a column, and this is an old-fashioned carbon C-like column for separating soluble carbohydrates. And then we elute it with water and increasing increments of ethanol. It drips off one drip at a time into the 500-ml bottle. We take the fractions and determine what their concentration is. It seems like I need to go backwards here. I've got a heavy finger on one side.
Yeah. Not working.
Let me see where I am here. Okay, I'm okay.
You okay?
I just have to get my act together.
You got time.
When it goes back way back. Okay, so it drips into the bottle, and then we can sample this bottle, dry the sample under nitrogen over P2O5 overnight, derivatize it with a trimethyl salicyl derivative, which increases the volatility so we can analyze it by gas chromatography. That gives us high resolution, and we can assay maybe 40 components simultaneously by GC analysis. This happens to be an extract from soybean, although the name of the GC is called buckwheat, you notice here. This is buckwheat soluble carbohydrates, also a GC profile. See fructose, glucose, two different glucoses, the A and B form, alpha and beta form. Chironostal, myonostal, internal standard. Sucrose, maltose, couple of peaks. Then we had a bunch of peaks that we didn't know what they were initially, and it turned out it's phagopyrrolate A1 and B1 from buckwheat, A2 and B3 from buckwheat, and A3 and B3 from buckwheat. Small amounts of galactanol, traces of raffinose and stachyose, small amounts of DGMI, which is galactanol with a second galactose, digalactosyl myonostal, and traces of a trigalactosyl myonostal. Recently, B3, DGMI, and TGMI have been confirmed, so now we've determined the structure, molecular structure, of all the phagopyrrolates and also the galactanol series compounds by NMR. From that big column, we can, by eluting with increasing amounts of ethanol, pick off the different fractions. Those fractions are freeze-dried concentrated and put onto a small column, again fractionated, and after three or four rounds of this, we end up with reasonably pure material. Insulin mediators are glucosamine or galactosamine derivatives of myonostol, chironostol in the center, or dipynotol on the right. Most of the glucosamine insulin mediators have to do with growth. The galactosamine dichironostol is one we're predominantly interested in. And this is the structure of that insulin mediator, which is believed to be deficient or insufficient in type 2 diabetics and also women with polycystic ovary syndrome. And to us, the interesting thing is that phagopyrrolate A1 is very, very similar in structure. It has the same linkage, and this OH group of phagopyrrolate A1, it has the NH2 group for the insulin mediator. So these are the models of the A1 and the insulin mediator. In type 2 diabetes, non-insulin dependent diabetes mellitus, we believe that there is an abnormal dichironostol metabolism, which does not make the precursor for the insulin mediator. So if you don't have enough dichironostol in your system, you don't have enough insulin mediator precursor, so that you cannot release the insulin mediator, which is this dimer, this galactosamine dichironostol, which we believe goes inside the cell where it activates glycogen synthase and results in converting blood glucose to glycogen, and so your blood glucose level goes down. In women with polycystic ovary syndrome, it's about 10% of women of reproductive age. The syndrome is noted by having enlarged ovaries with many cysts. Insulin responsiveness is decreased. Ovulation is infrequent and irregular. The disorder stimulates ovarian testosterone and all the many effects caused by that, side effects. And many with PCOS develop type 2 diabetes in early age, sometimes in their 20s versus post 40 for most of us. These individuals may also have impaired glucose tolerance and increased blood pressure. Both diseases are deficient or insufficient in the conversion of myonostol to dichironostol. And we think that is probably the beginning point of all this. For type 2 diabetes, if they're fed free dichironostol, they ended up with lower blood glucose, they became insulin responsive, and this process was enhanced by manganese. You remember I mentioned manganese was rich in the buckwheat. In the PCOS subjects, they have improved ovulatory function, improved glucose tolerance, improved blood pressure, and improved plasma triglycerides. For utilization studies, a number of reports have said that buckwheat products in Asia have been used for some time for treatment of diabetes. There have been some small animal testing recently on phagopyrrolates, and we think the same thing would apply for PCOS. Catherine Stedman, who is postdoc in my lab, likes to do home baking. So she made whole wheat rolls, and she lived in a co-op. And in the co-op, she was feeding them not only whole wheat rolls, but whole wheat rolls with 20% added buckwheat bran. And she was able to get about 108 milligrams of phagopyrrolates. And when she fed them to her housemates, 50% of the so-called volunteers preferred that nutty flavor. Now, when she went to 30%, then the rolls didn't rise as much, and there were other taste features that the volunteers didn't like quite as well. So there's one possible way to get these things incorporated into a diet. Using a buckwheat extract fed to rats, our friends in Canada determined that reduced serum glucose in chemically induced diabetic rats, these would be type 2 diabetic rats, gave them lowered blood glucose, and they concluded that buckwheat concentrate may be effective for lowering serum glucose concentrations in rats and may be useful in the treatment of diabetes. Another study, more recent, took Tartary buckwheat brand extract. They autoclaved it, which released a little bit more of the free decarinositol, fed that to rats, lowered plasma glucose and triglycerides, and improved glucose tolerance in type 2 diabetic mice. We've been doing quite a lot on the purification and molecular structure of all these compounds. For the biochemistry part, we've identified 2 genes out of buckwheat that we've cloned and determined their usefulness in synthesizing these products. So we have 1 gene that will make this alpha-1-3 linkage that's unique to that particular insulin mediator. We also think that enzyme will make the insulin mediator using the proper precursors. We've been studying related pathways, not only in buckwheat, but also in soybean. And we've identified genes and regulation. And we're looking now at some additional enzymes and genes for buckwheat. Phagopyrrolidone biosynthesis is from a galactanol synthase. The first one is from soybean. So soybean galactanol synthase can make phagopyrrolidone B1 when UDP galactose is the galactose donor and decarinositol is the galactose acceptor. The buckwheat gene, it's very similar to soybean. When we feed myo-inositol plus UDP galactose, it can form galactanol. Decarinositol can, with UDP galactose, can make phagopyrrolidone B1. The second gene, which is has an insert of about 15 amino acids near the N-terminal end, also makes galactanol, but when we feed chironositol and UDP galactose to the enzyme, it makes phagopyrrolidone B1 plus phagopyrrolidone A1. And A1 is the one that has the linkage similar to the insulin mediator. In soybean, some mutants of MIPS, myo-inositol phosphate synthase, stop this reaction so that you don't get myo-inositol formed. It reduces phytin levels in soybean and also results in reduced levels of raffinose and stachyose. Without myo-inositol, it also lowers decarinositol in soybean, and without myo-inositol, it decreases the amount of pinetol. So the MIPS mutation in this location stops the galactanol. Without galactanol, you don't get raffinose and stachyose, so it's low raffinose and stachyose. Another type of mutant in soybean was in the what's called the STAC1 mutant, has low raffinosynthase activity, which stops the accumulation or lowers the accumulation of raffinose and stachyose, but it doesn't affect the MIPS, so you get normal levels of phytic acid. And this particular line, we also found had increased levels of phagopyrrolidone B1, in addition B2 and B3. So we get some of these high molecular weight compounds. In buckwheat, we have glucose phosphate going to myo-inositol, going to chironositol by an unknown reaction. We're looking at that reaction now. And then with the FEGOLS2, we can make all of the following phagopyrrolidones. Buckwheat does not accumulate raffinose and stachyose, only trace amounts, and probably like that STAC1 mutation, it may have a limited amount of raffinose synthase. It also does not make deinonatol, does not make pinetols, or cannot accumulate the galactosylinonatols, which you find in certain legume seeds. Thank you very much.
Questions?
Do you have any information on the pyrethrolus metabolism once they get into that? Are they, how are they going to be assimilated, or could they be having effects through all their pyrethrolus?
Well, the larger ones probably aren't taken up by the gut, because they're trimers and tetramers. So they're probably hydrolyzed by bacterial enzymes in the distal small intestine and probably add to the flatulence syndrome. The dimer, we don't know. The lining of the gut, we think, can take up a lot of dimer sugars. And the lining of the gut also has enzymes to cleave those to their monomers. What the lining of the gut does not have is alpha-galactosidase, which would be required to cleave here. So we don't know the answer to that. We would like to think that it's taken up, hydrolyzed, or if it's taken up and some of it gets into the blood, it goes to the liver where it can be hydrolyzed, and then decarinostol can be recycled back into the blood.